You're listening to All Politics is Local in Massachusetts on New England's News and Talk Radio, 830 WCRN. Once again, here's your hosts, John Featherston and Terry Hendricks.
Good Sunday morning, New England. You're tuned to All Politics is Local on WCRN 830. That distinguished man over there, that's Terry Hendricks. Good morning, I'm John Featherston, and we're joined by Jim Wallace of the Gun Owners Action League. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Hey, you know, summer's over, I think, out there. As I'm driving down, I kind of noticed that, right?
Yeah, it's a little gray out there, and I guess we're getting some snow tonight.
But the Pats won, so.
Yes, they did.
There you go. Pats are looking good. Julian Edelman is the difference maker,
It looks like, a little bit. Even Amendola had a couple good plays.
Yep. And Gronk, I guess we won't kick him out anytime soon, right?
Well, not ever.
Just think how he'll play when his back and his knee feel better.
Hopefully is next week.
Yeah, absolutely. So things are looking good, and we're positive here. But we're talking guns on this Sunday morning. If you want to join the conversation, 508-871-7000. So, Jim, we were talking a little bit during the break. Massachusetts, legal gun owners, percentage of population in Massachusetts. What's that number, you think?
Well, it's actually very difficult to come up with that number, as far as percentages go. Number one, it fluctuates constantly. We back in 1998, before they passed the mess that was Chapter 180, we had 1.5 million licensed gun owners in the state of Massachusetts. Within a number of about 5 years, we actually asked one of the committees, the Post Audit and Oversight Committee, to take a look at it. And Massachusetts was, by 2002, was down to roughly 250,000 licensed gun owners. So, 80-85% drop in licensed gun ownerships in just 5 years. And, a lot of people try to tell us, those people either died, moved, or just gave up their license. And, our answer was, wow, somebody call Century 21 or the graveyards, because they're going to be busy in the next couple of days.
Yeah, would we have a plague?
Yeah, yeah. Walking Dead, here we come. But it's actually kind of difficult. Now, that number has jumped back up in the last few years, ever since Fast and Furious and a few other things have happened. I think we're over 300,000 again. We're probably 320,000, something like that. So, what are we? A population is about, 6 million in Massachusetts? So, you do the math and figure out. You got to remember, too, that a number of those licensed people are, law enforcement officers and that kind of thing. So, but it's kind of interesting that, Massachusetts, where, here we are, the birthplace of freedom. And, for the longest time, there was this big stigma about firearms. And there still is to some extent, but not as bad as it was. Even growing up, when I was old enough to go out and hunt on my own, I still had the rack in the back window of the pickup where the shotgun went, when we went out bird hunting. And, God help you if you do that. Now the black helicopters will come down and, take you out. I mean, even when I was a young teenager, I used to walk down Main Street with my .22 rifle and walk down to the farm, to shoot woodchucks. So I can't even imagine that happening these days, because people are just so out of control about, they have the right to feel a certain way, whether they feel safe or feel afraid.
I grew up in the Midwest in Ohio, and you'd bring your pickup truck to school with your gun rack in the back, and you'd bring your gun to school. And you tell people that nowadays, they look at you like you got three heads, like, what? Because you were going hunting after school.
And absolutely.
That wasn't that. I'm not young anymore, but I'm really not that old. And it's people think it's like a different world that we're living in. And Terry,
it is. I grew up in Oklahoma. I had a my first gun was a single shot .22 rifle, bolt action. So not even close to being automatic. But I was 8 or 9 years old. But I was also taught how to use a firearm responsibly. Literally, I'd get a whack up the side of the head if I didn't point it in the right direction or didn't treat it as if it were loaded, etc. Just kind of the basics were drilled into me at a pretty young age.
So you two boys actually moved here on purpose. That's a whole nother show.
Some might say at gunpoint that's a different story.
One of the things that we're actually facing here in Massachusetts is, nationally and even statewide for the most part, the old arguments just simply aren't being bought by the general public. They don't buy it anymore. If you look at the numbers that I just gave you and the reduction of gun owners, since the 1998 gun laws, The sad thing is, in that same time period, that gun crime has actually tripled in the state of Massachusetts. So, you know, we always get, well, you know, and I had this argument with a woman on Facebook the other day. She says, well, Jim, you can't blame Massachusetts gun laws. Massachusetts gun laws are effective. And I said, well, prove that they're effective. And her argument was, well, they would have been worse. And I said, okay. And then they moved to, well, it's the fault of our lax neighboring states because they're lax gun laws. You can buy a gun anywhere, which you can't.
Yeah, not true.
But, and then you come back and go, well, those supposed lax gun laws states, their gun crime has gone down. And I actually had this kind of debate through the media when Mayor Menino was still in office, and he was blaming all these other states that, you know, people will go down to Georgia or whatever, South Carolina, buy guns and bring them back. And, you know, and I said, so what you're saying is we have the most dedicated, loyal criminals in the country. They'll travel 1,000 miles to get a gun, but they'll always come home to commit the crimes. You know, it's just, it's absurd, you know, the notions that are out there. But, you know, right now we're actually facing a fight in Lexington, of all places. There's actually a gentleman that's trying to ban certain types of firearms and magazines within the town of Lexington. And again, you talk about the birthplace of freedom. Here we go, folks. But one of the things that I've started to talk about nationally, statewide, and locally to try to get people to focus on particular issues, because you cannot, forgive the pun, take a shotgun approach to these issues. And I break them down into three separate categories. One is firearm safety, which should never, ever be confused with crime. Firearm safety is what you talked about. Yep. I got education as a kid or as an adult. You know, I went through hunter education or I went through a basic pistol course or whatever it might be. That's firearm safety, okay? And we have a pretty good handle on that. It is extraordinarily rare for somebody, especially in Massachusetts, to get accidentally killed by a firearm. We might lose one, maybe two a year, and I know, you know, every life is precious. But for the most part, those are usually gang members who are too stupid to know how to safely use a gun that look down the barrel to see if it's loaded, you know.
And then pull the trigger.
Well, you know, that's Darwin. Hello.
Yeah, yeah.
But number two is criminal use of firearms, and that's a separate issue. And then number three is mental health and suicides. Now, suicides are the greatest death rate of anything we face here in Massachusetts. As a matter of fact, I was surprised back in 2013 and 14, you know, after Newtown, when we were just going through the roof trying to get a handle on everything. I was amazed in Massachusetts, for some reason, and nobody's been able to answer this, since the year about 2000, suicide by hanging and suffocation has skyrocketed. Hmm. It's actually more than suicide by poison, firearms, and what was the other one? And drugs combined. It's tremendously high. It's like over 270. So those three are the separate issues. So when somebody comes to me and says, we must do X, Y, Z, okay, which one of these issues is that going to help? And when you break that down to them, you know, then they have to start a discussion. The problem is we are living in a very complex world when it comes to firearms, but we also live in a soundbite society.
Well, let's pick that up on the other end of the break. We're with Jim Wallace of the Gun Owner Action League. Get on the phone, 508-871-7000. We're going to talk about the soundbite generation we live in. We're also going to talk about the terror watch list, the toy guns, and local permitting. You're tuned to All Politics is Local on WCRN 830. We'll be back with Jim Wallace.
You're listening to All Politics is Local in Massachusetts on New England's News and Talk Radio, 830 WCRN. Once again, here's your hosts, John Featherston and Terry Hendricks.
You're tuned to All Politics is Local on WCRN 830. We're talking guns on this Sunday morning. Join us on the phones at 508-871-7000. That's 508-871-7000. He's Terry Hendricks. I'm John Featherston. And our guest in studio is Jim Wallace of the Gun Owner Action League. Terry, we were talking a little bit earlier. Your permit is coming up this year. And yep. A lot of people that I know are concerned about the permitting process. Jim, can you kind of fill us in on what's new with the permitting process and, you know, renewing your license to carry.
Yeah. You know, first I got to say that bumper music could be great for the next Republican debate on the national level. We've all seen what those things have turned into. Anyway, the licensing renewal process in Massachusetts has historically been a very problematic thing. Back when Mitt Romney was in office, the system got so bad, even though the law said they had 40 days to renew your license once you've applied, it in some cases was taking a year and a half. So it was really a serious issue. And these, even as of late, you know, in the past maybe 5 years, it's you know, well past the 40-day mark, sometimes up to 6 months before you see a license renewal. So in the last law that was passed back in 2014, we actually got a lot of changes and reforms in that law. And one of them was that if you apply for a license and you apply prior to your expiration date, which sometimes even that can be difficult, trying to get an appointment with the licensing officer, your license will now be valid until they give you an answer. And it stays on the state system. Before, the problem was, even though there was a grace period, there was some concern because your license still said expired, you know, but there was nothing at the state level that said, okay, it's still good for 90 days. So, you know, should you be allowed to carry outside the house? Can you buy a gun? Can you buy ammunition? Whatever. So now the law is totally changed. As a matter of fact, they took away the 40-day mandate because local towns said they just can't comply with it. So we'll just make your license valid until we can get the job done. Now, in this day and age, if you can't comply with 40 days, there's just something wrong inherently in the system. You know, I mean, I can go online and, you know, get a passport for crying out loud quicker than that. So
yeah, you can apply for Social Security. You can register to vote.
Yeah. Yep. As long as you get a license, you can register to vote. But let's not get into that debate. So it's actually a complex system, but I always recommend that people contact their local authority well in advance. I'm talking 2 to 3 months in advance, and make sure that you get the process started. Don't wait for the notice that's going to come from the state, which they tried to get rid of during the Patrick administration, and we fought like heck to make sure that you got notified, which you do, and they're pretty good about it.
Well, they even did that with your driver's license, too.
Well, it was crazy.
Didn't last.
You know, I don't want to get too much into this, but when Deval Patrick was governor, we tried for 5 years to get a meeting with that individual. At one time, we on our website, we had a day counter. It was just counting the days as we're waiting. And, it was just...
Just didn't respond, or would just, you know, extend it out, or what?
They didn't care. Well, the thing is that they just didn't care about us enough to want to respond. But apparently it wasn't just us, because when you start talking to people across the state, doesn't matter what the issue is, apparently that administration just didn't pick up the phone.
I always thought the Second Amendment was a pretty important thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing was I did get one chance to call him out because I was in a judiciary hearing. And he came in personally to testify on his gun bill at the time. And he had the nerve to call us out and said, if the gun owners only understood what we were trying to accomplish, they'd probably help us instead of fight us. Well, we've been trying to meet with you for 5 years. You could have explained this to us. So I waited until he left the hearing room because I knew the press would be all over him. Mm-hmm. And I kind of pushed my way through the press and handed the governor my business card and introduced myself and said, Governor, been trying to meet with you for 5 years. Love to understand what you're trying to do. Give me a call someday, right in front of the media. So that was, you know, that was kind of a...
Still waiting for that phone call?
Yeah, still waiting for that phone call. So I suppose when he gets his appointment as Supreme Court Justice, you know, maybe I'll get that call and I can go talk to him about it.
Okay, my Sunday morning has just been ruined.
I think it was the cornflakes, right? So anyway, you know, back to the firearms issues. Licensing is always an issue. We did get rid of the Class Bs last year, which is good. I myself would like to go, well, of course, would like to get rid of licensing, period, but I'd like to go down to just one license anyway. We tried that once. We filed legislation to make it one license because even now we got rid of the pepper spray license. Took us 18 years to get rid of that thing.
That's pretty dangerous stuff.
Oh, that's, you know, I used to travel the country and I said, we are the only state in the nation that licenses a condiment, you know. So it's we get rid of that. We get rid of the Class B license. So we went from 4 down to 2, unless you include the Class 3 license, which is the machine gun licenses, and those are pretty rare.
Terry's waving his license to carry around the studio. Right
Class
now.
A, large capacity, folks.
Yep. Yeah, I try to buy a large capacity. That's the problem, too. But the so we tried to make it age-based. That just didn't fly because there's still this, you know, this thing in people's heads about, well, you should have a special license to own a handgun, you know, in Massachusetts. Well, you know, we're one of only, I think, five states that even license long guns. The rest of the country, you have to have a background check to buy one,
mm-hmm.
but you don't have to have a license to own one. I mean, the fact, you know, crime, I mean, not that I want to, you know, say anything bad against handguns, but criminals rarely use shotguns and rifles to commit crimes.
Right.
It's just,
except
it's
when they're robbing
rare.
Banks, maybe.
It's, well, you know, even that, and it's kind of strange. But, you know, one other thing that actually Goal was very proactive on in this last big bill was we actually created a lot of criminal language to hand tools to law enforcement and the prosecutors. Now the problem is, are they going to use them? One of the things we actually created and came up with was the Criminal Firearms and Trafficking Division of the State Police. And the idea was if you had one unit at the top that was in charge of investigating and prosecuting all firearms major crime, you know, not that you didn't have the right license for the magazine you owned or you didn't quite store it properly, whatever, but, you know, you're talking trafficking of illegal firearms, you're talking homicide, you're talking about dealing drugs with illegal guns, you know, that kind of thing. And the idea was if you had one unit at the top, they would quickly come up with common denominators about who's really involved, where are the guns really coming from. They're not coming from gun shows. That's just such a myth. It's unbelievable.
Oh, yeah, that's a big red herring.
It absolutely is. And most people don't realize that regardless, if you're a licensed retailer in this country, no matter where you sell that gun, whether it's at a gun show or at your store, you still have to follow all the laws, do the background check, fill out all the paperwork. It's just such a myth. It's unbelievable. But the you know, the more and more we get into this, and it is, you said just before the break, it's such a complex situation, but it's such a soundbite society.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't have the patience to get past that soundbite. They hear something, you know, like, for instance, the president, oh, by the way, that big press conference the president had about gun control, there were virtually no changes. You know, it was almost a half hour of, you know what, this is a problem. Something should be done. Good night.
Well, I guess the reality, though, is for me, the devil's always in the details, and I think the details are yet to come. I know he's talking about hiring another 200 agents or whatever.
Sure.
Primarily to do background checks. I guess that's okay.
Sure, about
but
time.
Is that what they're really going to do?
Well, that's it. I mean, you know, one of the things is, you know, I had somebody come up to me and say, you know, mental health is a massive issue, and it is a huge issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, I assume you guys are going to lobby for more money for mental health. Well, wait a minute. Where's the money going? Well, mental health. Okay. So you can't answer my question. So until I know where any money's going, I'm not going to lobby for it in the first place. But, you know, so basically, when you look at all of these issues, and we've already covered a little scatter of them,
mm-hmm.
like I said during the break, I break things down now into three separate issues. One is, you know, firearm safety, again, which should never be confused with crime, criminal misuse of firearms, and then mental health and suicides. And when anybody comes to me and says, you know, we need to do X, Y, and Z, okay, which one of these things that you're talking about is going to solve an issue in one of those three categories? Now, let's take, for instance, you talk about the soundbite society. Well, okay, let's deal with the criminal use of firearms. Let's talk about the no-fly list and the terrorist watch list. You know, it should be obvious that anybody on those lists should never have a gun. Okay, first of all, do you understand what the no-fly list is? The no-fly list is simply a list of names, not a list of people. And they say, well, people say, well, that doesn't make sense. I say, well, because it's not Joe Smith with this fingerprint and this Social Security number. It's just Joe Smith. And so now anybody named Joe Smith is going to get stopped. So you're telling me that every Joe Smith should lose their right to keep and bear arms because some other Joe Smith happened to get on the list. The terrorist watch list, the FBI is simply not going to share. The whole idea of being on that list is that they don't want you to know you're being watched. So they're not going to share that information. The other problem is there's absolutely no due process. And interestingly enough, the ACLU has even stepped in on this and said, no, absolutely not. There is no due process. And even when I was talking to the national media, when I was being interviewed about this stuff, I was amazed to find out there's over 1 million names on that list.
Wow.
That's a holy cow kind of number.
That is. It's a big number. Hey, it's the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a break for CBS News. You're tuned to All Politics is Local in Massachusetts. We're with Jim Wallace of the Gun Owners Action League. Got a question for Jim. He's the expert. 508-871-7000. You're tuned to All Politics is Local on WCRN 830.
Let's return to All Politics is Local in Massachusetts on New England's News and Talk Radio, WCRN. Once again, here's your hosts, John Featherston and Terry Hendricks.
In Massachusetts, WCRN 830. He's Terry Hendricks. I'm John Featherston. We're joined by Jim Wallace of the Gun Owner Action League. Note to management, we should really put the stuff that goes on in the studio when we're in commercial breaks on the air. But we'll leave that to your imagination. Hey, we're talking guns here on All Politics is Local, 508-871-7000. Let's pick back up on the terror watch list and the no-fly list, Jim, and pick it back up on that conversation because we went to the break. 1 million people are on the terror watch list.
Yeah, and that's the number that was given to us when this stuff started to break a few weeks ago, and I was getting calls from the national media. I even got a call from CNN London that wanted to do an interview when the president was talking about this. And, I think it's kind of interesting because when you hear him talk about the no-fly list, it's, somebody who, shouldn't be able to fly a plane can't own a gun. I said, well, wait a minute. When I board Southwest, I'm not looking to fly the plane. I'm just looking to get on the plane. You always got to listen to those sound bites carefully and see what's behind it. But the terrorist watch list, and, anybody that really knows more than I do, please feel free to correct me because I'm willing to be educated, unlike some of my opposition. The FBI is not going to share that list.
Right.
The whole idea behind what they're doing is that they don't want people to know they're being watched, and that's how they gain information. I mean, if you look at what happened in San Bernardino, have you guys ever seen the FBI step in so fast in your life? And they were able to find that car in a matter of minutes. I mean, number one, it's kind of interesting. It's cool that they were able to do it. But as a citizen, it's also kind of frightening that there's so much license plate recognition technology in California. Mm-hmm. They knew exactly where that car was within a matter of minutes.
Oh, well, there are cameras everywhere.
Well, in Massachusetts too. So just so you know.
Yeah. It's pretty incredible. But the whole notion that the FBI is going to share that list with somebody who's doing a background check so I can buy a .22 rifle is just absurd. It's not going to happen. But when you say things like that to the general public that, hey, listen, I'm not trying to take anybody's guns away, but don't you think that somebody on the no-fly list or the terrorist watch list should be automatically banned? And the average person who has no idea of any information behind the subjects are going to go, well, sure, that makes sense. Absolutely, that makes sense. Really? Okay, well, the biggest joke is, which wasn't a joke, when Ted Kennedy was alive, he was on the no-fly list.
Yeah, but probably for good reason.
Well, it's, there's not enough gin or scotch on any plane.
Just cover the ice.
But anyway.
It's scotch. Yeah. It's a company. It's a family brew.
But, and those are, unfortunately, the sound bites that we have to deal with all the time. It's, for instance, it's, the gun shows. People go there with, they can buy a gun without a background check. Not from a licensed retailer, they can't. And predominantly, most of those people are licensed retailers. Now, the other thing people don't know is that, and I get this all the time from the media. Well, you can just go up to New Hampshire and anybody can walk in and buy a handgun without a background check or a license. Okay, but they've broken about 13 different state and federal laws because you cannot transport a handgun across state lines that has been purchased. And don't care where you purchase it. The only way legally to get a handgun from one state to another, if you're buying it, is it has to be shipped from a licensed retailer in the state you bought it and shipped into a licensed retailer in the state of Massachusetts, and then you have to go do all the state and federal paperwork, all the background checks, and that's if the gun is legal to be shipped into Massachusetts, which, you know, we have the Attorney General's regulations against handguns, which is a whole different show we could do, and, you know, match that with the Executive Office of Public Safety of approved handgun roster and the, you know, the high capacity roster, and it just goes on and on and on in the state. But one of the things that we need to start having a conversation about nationally, and this is where we're headed, and we're headed there soon, is not who's disqualified to own a gun. Pretty soon it's going to be, okay, who's left that's qualified? Mm. Because they're making that list of disqualifications bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. I mean, I use it as an example all the time in Massachusetts. No, it's a serious subject, but your first driving under the influence conviction in Mass, you lose your guns for the rest of your life. You get your car license back in 90 days. Now, your gun was home in the safe. You were driving the car, but you get your car back in, whatever, 90 days, but you lose your guns for the rest of your life.
Unbelievable. Hey, let's talk about the toy gun situation and orange tape. And your thoughts, you know, inform the audience about that out there.
Yeah, here's another soundbite situation where, you know, somebody comes to a microphone and says, you know, there's an unfortunate tragedy. A young man, I think 12 years old in Cleveland, got shot and killed by police because he pointed a toy gun or it was a pellet gun at a police officer. You know, my first reaction is, why didn't he know better not to point even a fake gun at a police officer, okay? So, but you know, a legislator comes forward and says, I'm going to solve this problem. We're going to mandate that all toy guns, all pellet guns, all BB guns are now have to have a permanent orange stripe manufactured into them somehow, and this is how we're going to save lives.
Isn't that Pacheco actually raised that law here? Actually, he's sponsoring that law in Massachusetts?
This person is Culhane out of South Boston.
Okay.
It's a new one. But we actually faced this now 10 years ago, thereabouts, and I believe it was New Bedford. And the situation was that two officers got a 911 call. They went into what they thought was a well-known drug house, and when they entered the building, a man came off the couch, pointed what they thought was a real gun. They didn't take a chance. They shot and killed him. As far as I'm concerned, they did their job because they need to go home alive. Turned out to be a pellet gun. The city of New Bedford was up in arms that law enforcement had killed this man. Their whole thing was that we need to ban pellet guns. We need to have a permanent orange stripe. And even the police said, oh, great. So now every illegal handgun out there is going to have an orange stripe on it. So they think we're, you know, if you are a police officer and you're going to get up in a press conference with these legislators and tell me that just because you see an orange stripe on what you think is a gun, you're going to relax, you're dead.
Right.
You're lying.
That's putting every police officer in America at risk.
So as a result of the of New Bedford, see why they were doing this, especially the criminals, not young children, but why they were doing this was they would commit crimes with fake guns, with pellet guns, so they could avoid the gun charges if they got caught. And so what we did in this past bill, we tried it, filed it for, I don't know, 5-6 years or even more than that. It's called the Deceptive Weapons Law, and Goal came up with this, that if you are in the commission of a violent crime, not just a kid carrying, but a violent crime, and you're in possession of anything that's supposed to portray the presence of a weapon to law enforcement or your victim, you can now be charged as if you had a real gun in your hand. Now, that's not going to solve the little kid issue. But getting back to that part, again, the three things I said, safety, criminal use, or suicide. This is going to be safety, okay? Where's the educational component in this idea? There is none. And that's Goal's one of, oh, boy, we go crazy on this. The state collects millions of dollars every year in gun license fees. We shouldn't have to pay a fee, but we do. And they do absolutely nothing with it to promote gun safety. Nothing. Not even a PSA about how to use a trigger lock. They use nothing. And it's one of the things that I think, you know, we as gun owners both nationally, the state groups, the local groups have done a phenomenal job with gun safety training. But it'd be nice if we have to pay money that the money's actually used for, you know, some safety issues. And unfortunately, the state does absolutely nothing. So where's the educational component on this? How about we teach kids not to point things at police officers, especially in the heightened situation? I got to tell you, when I was a kid, if I heard a voice behind me that said, police, stop, freeze, drop what's in your hand, guess what I'm doing?
You're stopping.
Freeze yep, and drop dropping. What's in my hand. And I'll be there till tomorrow until I hear somebody say
absolutely.
Different.
Absolutely.
You know, but unfortunately, there's this whole thing between kids and cops now that they're not their friends, that they're there to hurt them. And, again, it's education.
No, the police are our friends. We're going to carry Jim over into the next break. You're tuned to All Politics is Local in Massachusetts. We'll be back.
You're listening to All Politics is Local in Massachusetts on New England's News and Talk Radio, 830 WCRN. Once again, here's your hosts, John Featherston and Terry Hendricks.
You're tuned to All Politics is Local on WCRN 830. We just got a couple minutes left and a lot to cover with Jim Wallace of GOAL. Jim, tell the audience a little bit about what GOAL really is.
Sure. Gun Owners Action League, again, has been around since 1976. We're the only full-time organization, advocacy organization in the Northeast for gun owners. We have a full-time lobbyist, and that's unfortunately my job. I get to have fun up at the State House on a regular basis. We have a full-time trainer in John Green, and that's all he does is training programs. And, you know, oddly enough, in the past probably 5-6 years, training programs for women has just been astronomical. We can't keep up with that demand. And most people would have thought, you know, 9/11 would have changed that mind. You know, talking to a lot of women, it's actually the storms that have changed their mind. If you look at, what was it, Sandy that hit New Jersey and so forth, a lot of women that I've talked to that are taking these courses, other than the fact of what's happening with national politics, never thought that if they called 911 that nobody could come. Even if they wanted to, they can't reach you. And what didn't make the national media was during that storm in Sandy, there were gangs actually going house to house, bashing in doors and taking whatever they wanted because they know there's no way police are coming. Even if people could call, they're not coming. So a lot of women now want to take responsibility for their own personal safety. And I got to tell you, the backlash, not to get too far off subject here, but the backlash that Moms for Demand Action is getting, because they actually tweeted out, you know, because they're against self-defense, actually said, you know, as far as women in a violent situation, that rape only lasts minutes, murder is forever.
I guess it depends on who's going to get murdered.
Well, I guess they're considering self-defense to be murder. So tell a rape victim that it only lasts minutes.
Absolutely.
You know, but anyway, Gun Owners Action League, again, full-time organization. We have taken part in so many debates. The things we stop on a regular basis up at the state level is unbelievable, that people will probably never even hear about. We're constantly on air. We're constantly trying to get our message out. As a matter of fact, after the Newtown murders, most of my colleagues around the state chose not to get in front of the media. I took every microphone they would hand me because I wanted to make sure we got our message out. And my staff tells me that between the Newtown murders and maybe March 1st, I did 150 media appearances. So we're always out there getting a message out. We help organize local efforts, like right now in Lexington, trying to defeat a measure there that would ban certain types of firearms and magazines from the town limits. And the person who actually proposed this idea was actually on another station last week when I was on, and actually proposed that the chief start going house to house to licensed gun owners, asking them to surrender their guns. Because there's no need for them. Try being the police chief in that instance. Yeah, I don't think so. Not a good idea. So,
well, we're definitely going to have you back on because there's so much more to talk about. But real quick, recourse for people who are denied on their application. Can you give people a real quick?
Well, there's kind of two levels there. First of all, is you have to look at what your local authorities are demanding, and we have issue with a few towns right now that are making people do things like written exams about the gun laws before they'll even allow you to get into the license application process. And they have absolutely no authority to do that. We actually got the language tightened up quite a bit in the last gun bill as far as the chief's authority. They have to have good reason, and they have to now be able to say what that reason is. In Massachusetts, for the first time ever, you actually now have the legal right to actually challenge a restriction and before a court, and it's up to the chiefs. Now, the chiefs also wanted carte blanche when it come to the FID cards. They wanted to be able to deny you for any reason. That didn't happen. We fought that tooth and nail, and actually what we came up with was if they believe for some reason that outside of your background checks you still shouldn't even own a rifle or shotgun, they have to go before a judge and prove their case and provide the evidence as to why. So at least you know why you're being denied, because some chiefs just simply wouldn't give you that information. Now, I'm going to tell you that the majority of the chiefs in Massachusetts are good people to work with. They just believe, listen, this is the laws. We'll follow the laws. We'll do the background checks. If you pass, you get your license. You know, it's a civil right, and that's what it needs to be treated like in Massachusetts. And for the longest time, it simply has not been. Some chiefs who are not very cooperative, don't like the Second Amendment, don't believe anybody should carry a gun except for them, count on the fact that if you have to appeal your decision in court, it's going to cost you money, and a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And most families don't have the $5,000 to $10,000 to hire an attorney and challenge the stuff in court. So they use that. And then even if you win in district court, they'll appeal it to Superior Court, so it's going to cost you even more.
Even more, yeah.
So, they count on that. But we're starting to whittle that stuff down. Now, interestingly enough, we started changing some of the terminology used in the licensing issues. Matter of fact, for the first time ever, we actually put in law the term prohibited person, believe it or not. Hmm. It's not that you're suitable, it's whether you're prohibited or not. And this is a holy cow kind of situation I found myself in a number of years ago, when I was in a meeting with some of the Firearms Record Bureau, State Police, and so forth, and I asked them, just trying to get an understanding of where they stood and how the system worked, I said, can you tell me how many people applied for a license in, say, the last 2 years and got it? And they said, yeah, we can give you that number. I said, okay. Can you tell me how many people applied for a license and were denied and why they were denied? And they said, no, we don't keep that information. Really?
Why?
So you have a multi-million dollar database on the good guys, but you have no information on the people you've denied a license and why you've denied them. That's the state of Massachusetts. Now, to put it in a nutshell, a number of years ago, a local district attorney was actually being interviewed by the media, and he was asked about a certain situation, and the media said, was it this, remember the little boy that got killed at the machine gun shoot back in 08? The media was asking the DA, was it legal for this little boy to be shooting a machine gun?
Right.
Now, to the average person, this would mean nothing. But to me, I almost fell off my chair. When the DA said, I can find no law that allows this activity to take place, there's no such thing in our system of justice. Laws are put in place to ban things. We do not have laws that allow things. Other than giving government certain limited authorities, there's no such thing. But that's the way government has started to think. Wow. If we haven't given you permission, you don't have that permission. So anyway, folks, that's kind of the way it is. If you want to know more about GOAL, you can go to our website, www.goal.org. You can contact us via email at staff@goal.org. Any questions on the laws or how about you can become active in the situations that we're in all the time? And we're also, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter. Just give us a look, and if you've got questions, we'd be glad to answer them for you.
Well, what a great representative you are for GOAL. Thanks for joining us. We're going to change the topic for just the next couple minutes. At 9 o'clock tonight, there's a Democrat debate.
On NBC?
NBC, once again, hiding the Democrats, Sunday night. I don't understand that logic, but Jim, please weigh in on the Democrat debate. What do you think that's going to look like?
Boy, I don't know. I mean, who's there to even consider? The sad thing is we actually have a lot of Democrat friends here in Massachusetts. One of the things that we always face on a constant basis is, especially in election year like this year, God help us, if Hillary Clinton gets the Democrat nod and she turns out to be the candidate, we'll endorse local people who have helped us and greatly deserve it. And then because they're in the Democrat Party, they'll endorse Hillary Clinton. And that's a huge conflict for our members.
Yeah.
I don't want to get into all the tinfoil hat stuff that's out there, but I still can't believe that Mrs. Clinton has a single supporter in this country. I don't care if you look at what happened when her husband was president, but since she has been Secretary of State, since she's been a senator, and now a candidate for president, there's just too much there, using some of their lingo. And if you only believe 10% of the things that she's been accused of, there's no way she should have a single supporter in this country.
Hey, Terry, I think we've got our new favorite guest on here. All Politics is Local.
Come by every week for about an hour.
Absolutely. Hey, this date in history, Terry.
Well, today is happy birthday to Betty White, who's 94 years old.
God bless her.
Yeah, James Earl Jones, who brought you the Force.
Darth Vader.
Yeah, exactly. Muhammad Ali, got to be one of your favorite boxers of all time. Steve Harvey, keep you laughing. Jim Carrey, another guy. Michelle Obama is 52 today.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday,
to the First
Michelle.
Lady.
And a good Republican, Kid Rock.
Yeah, there you go. Gun guy, too, yeah.
Yep, 45. Yes, he is. And
good bourbon, too.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, good bourbon.
So, happy birthday to all those folks. And by the way, the first National UN Security Council meeting was in 1946 in London.
There you go. Hey, you've been listening to All Politics is Local on WCRN 830. Once again, goal.org. Get a hold of Jim's organization. That's Terry Hendricks. I'm John Featherston. We'll be back again next Sunday. And if it's the weekend, it must be All Politics is Local on WCRN 830.